Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Roll the Quadcast, a Blogger So Deer podcast where little old Charlie Brown is still trying to kick that football. Blogger So Deer is the go-to website for the best independent analysis of Wake Forest athletics.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of Roll the Quadcast. My name is Riley Johnston, and as always, I am joined by my co-host Robert Reinhardt. Rob, how are we doing tonight on this bowl-eligible Monday?
Oh, doing fantastic this evening on this bowl-eligible Monday. Was looking great for a while on Saturday, then very comfortable, then outstanding again. So always good to show up to work on Monday morning after your college football team secured a big victory over the weekend.
Yeah, you're always walking a little bit on cloud nine when you kind of talk to your coworkers about who might have gone to other schools, and they say, hey, you know, your team's bowl eligible. That's a great way to start. And just a heads up about this podcast, Rob will probably be dropping out of somewhere around midway, and I will take us the rest of the way. We've got a lot to talk about so far. It was a very, very busy weekend for Wake Forest Athletics, starting with the men's basketball game on Friday night that we unfortunately lost to Georgia Southern in a fairly mild, moderate, I would say, upset, 85-83 at the last second. Then we bounced back a little bit emotionally on Saturday, and as Rob noted, that was a roller coaster on its own, where we got up fast, 21-14. Then Syracuse came back, scored the next 24 points, and then Wake Forest romped them in the second half, outscoring the Orange 40-5, en route to a 64-43 victory that secured bowl eligibility. And then we moved into Sunday yesterday, where the Wake Forest men's soccer team took us through a similar up and down experience. I was fortunate enough to be able to attend that game. It was about 15 minutes north of Charleston, and it was a great atmosphere. The congregation was fantastic. The game was tied at zero, went to penalty kicks. Wake Forest got a red card in the 43rd minute that called to play a man down for the final 67 minutes. But Virginia insisted on staying back and not playing soccer at all. So Wake took advantage of that, took it to penalty kicks, and inevitably won their second straight ACC championship. It was announced earlier today they were also the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, which they probably would have been anyway since Indiana lost in penalty kicks to number 24 Wisconsin yesterday in the Big Ten conference final. But let's first start with football, the big thing part of the weekend. Wake Forest won their sixth game of the season, overcoming a 14-point deficit to Syracuse, 38-24, scoring 40 unanswered points in the second half to defeat them 64-43. Rob, what are your overall impressions about the game, the resiliency of Wake Forest, and talk about our guy, John Wolford?
Yeah, that was exciting. I mean, Wake Forest, if you think about how we've had to win in previous years under Clawson, when we've won ACC games his first 2 years, it was these comical scores of 3-0, and BC has horrific clock management as the game ends. We win 6-3 in double overtime. But, you know, this year we're putting up points, and we're putting up points on everybody, even 14 against Clemson, put up, you know, a lot of points against State, against Florida State. And, this is a game we couldn't have won in years past just because, you know, the number of points Syracuse scored in the first half would have been more than we would have scored all game, maybe in two games sometimes. But, really outstanding offensive execution throughout the entire game. Stalled a bit in the second quarter, but, you know, the first quarter they were clicking so much. And then I thought it was huge at the end of the first half where we hit Tabari Hines for that 44-yard gain, and then Colburn gets us a few extra yards, sets us up in field goal position, two possessions. Then you get the ball back to start the second half. I thought that was big. Wolford was unbelievable. Won some accolades as ACC offensive back of the week, as he rightfully deserved. Really distributed the ball well to Serenay, to Hines, to Scotty Washington, who continues to emerge. That's a really encouraging sign, I think, moving forward. So, you know, Wake Forest is now, you know, we're playing an exciting brand of football. We're winning, and we're winning with style. you would have told me we were going to be down 17 points and find a way to win an ACC road game by 21, would have never believed it in a million years. But here we are, and I think this is going to be big time moving forward.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you there. I think in years past and maybe games past, when it got to 38-21 with 17 seconds left, Dave Clawson would have said, hey, we're taking a knee, we're going to halftime, we'll figure it out then. So I give him a big kudos to finally going for it, like showing some aggressiveness, showing faith in your offensive line, your quarterback, your running game. And, you know, that pass to Hines, Hines made a guy miss and then got down there. I think that was a turning point in the game. And also, after we had traded field goals to make it 41-27, a play that sticks out to me. It was 3rd-and-7 on, I believe, our own 25-to-30-yard line. Wolford took a couple seconds to throw the ball, but the line blocked long enough, and he found Serenier right across the middle. It was a high ball. Cam went up to grab it, caught it, and that kind of kept that drive alive and spurted it to go there. And you don't know what would have happened if we missed that. It's a two-possession game with approximately 22 minutes left. But, you know, we got down there. I think we scored that touchdown with about 5 minutes left in the third the third quarter. So that would have made it – we scored 37 points in the final, 20 minutes, which obviously will get you a lot of victory. So I thought that was a turning point in the game. And you can't say enough about what Wolford did. You know, if you don't count garbage time, then he was over 500 total yards. But he threw the ball, 38 times, 25 completions, which is 66%, took just one sack, had about 9.26 yards per attempt, and also ran the ball for 138 yards before taking out the loss. It was really a phenomenal performance, and he won the offensive back of the week, and he likely won it over his battery mate, Matt Colburn. If I had to pick another guy to win it, it would either be A.J. Dillon from BC or Matt Colburn. Rob, what do you think the offensive line? There are a lot of interesting stats tweeted out today by David Hale, particularly at ESPN, and kind of showing the development of the offensive line. But they've really stepped up over the last four games especially, but it's come together as a pretty cohesive unit. Do you think that has kind of spurred the play calling to be more aggressive, or do you think the aggressive play calling since the Louisville game has helped out the offensive line, or do you think it's kind of a combination of the two?
You know, it's probably some kind of a combination, but I do think that this offensive line has gotten so much better. It was anemically bad in the first few years. We sort of took our beatings, but that's something that Clawson went out and recruited early on, redshirted them, developed them for the strength and conditioning program. They've really grown up together, Haynes, Anderson, Haran, you know, all those guys. And, you know, we're going to return it back next year. But I think Wolford's getting so much credit for his performances this year, and rightfully so, along with Colburn in recent weeks. So I agree, he was absolutely outstanding this past week and in previous games. But, you know, you just mentioned it. Wolford had time to throw to Serenay because the line was able to block so well. They're generating a lot of holes to allow Colburn to run downhill. And we're just not doing that without them. So when you have better players, I think as a play caller, you have a lot more freedom. And he's able to take a lot more deep shots down the field that in previous years, even if your receivers could theoretically get open and beat their man, it may have been too late because the line didn't block well enough. So this is – been a unit that Clawson said 2 or 3 years ago would be a position of strength at one point. And, you know, here we are. It's 2017, and it's a position of strength for Wake Forest, and, you know, has allowed us to do a lot of great things on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I think this game kind of featured a complete turnaround of the season. And, you know, we had that game against Louisville where we came out throwing the ball all over the place, but that's against a very bad defense in Louisville. So I don't want to discredit that, but like how well we played, but putting up 64 points against a defense in Syracuse, who's not great, but they're not bad either. I think the most they've given up was 35 to LSU, and then they allowed 64 points against us. No defensive touchdown, no special teams touchdown. That's pretty impressive for offense. And there are so many records that Wake broke on Saturday. We had most yards in a game, 734. Cam Serenier set the all-time ACC reception yards for a career, passing Carolina's Eric Ebron. Wolford tied his own school record at 6 touchdowns. An odd stat is – the first time in school history that only two players for Wake Forest have carried the ball, in Colburn and Wolford, which I didn't really realize till after the game. Kind of an odd stat there, but it's weird that in our 111 year history, nobody else has ever done that. Like just two guys carrying it. Which I found kind of unique. But overall, the offense was obviously fantastic, and there's so many guys that you can point to, whether it's Matt Colburn for effectively saving the backfield season for Christian Beal, you know, the offensive line for stepping up, Scotty Washington, Nabari Hines stepping up with the Dortch injury when they were called upon, Serigne stepping up. You can go on all day about that. But it's not all sunshine and rainbows, though, Rob. Yes, Wake Forest is bowl eligible at 6-4, but the defense continues to struggle immensely since Jesse Bates hurt himself in the Louisville game. But we saw a slight, hope, I guess, in the second half that maybe we can turn this around the final two games in the bowl game against State, Duke, and the opponent to be determined. What did you see in the second half that was different than the first half where they allowed, 38 points and then turned it around to only allowing 5 points?
Yeah, I think we just had better discipline overall. I know in Clawson's post-game comments, he made a number of mentions that they didn't necessarily make too many defensive adjustments. It was a matter of just sticking with their assignment and not losing their man. I know he mentioned on the RPO to the Syracuse tight end where he was wide open. That was a blown assignment, and similar to that 4th-and-2 end around, he said that was also a blown assignment. So, I guess they just limited some mental mistakes there in the second half. And we were able to force a few turnovers. Our turnover luck started to improve to the mean, I guess. I don't know if it's necessarily a regression, if it's improving, but, got some big turnovers that helped flip some field position. I thought that was big and, benefited. Yeah, from a missed field goal, I believe that might have just been in the first half. But, they locked down, and I was just impressed by what I saw. Though Clawson gave them a lot more compliments at the end of the game than I would have liked. I mean, I know he wants to keep the emotion high because they just secured a big victory. But the bottom line is we were only in that game because of the offense in the first half. And much like the defense has kept us in games in previous years, the offense kept us in there, and we were in the game despite the defense's horrific showing in the first half.
Yeah, and as frustrating as the first half was watching the defense, and especially for just the linebackers, we've talked about this, and I'm not a defensive expert by any stretch of the imagination, and a lot of times until you see the All-22, it's hard to know. I don't know the assignments that the linebackers have, but it seems a lot of the game we're just playing with a front line of the defensive line and then the secondary, and if we don't get to the quarterback or the quarterback sneaks free, then there's just nobody in the middle of the field. I don't really know sometimes what Dawson Kemp and either Jabori Williams or Justin Strnad, if he's in there, are doing out there. And I'm not trying to throw these guys under the bus, but it has felt almost all year that we just don't have a second level of defender. And on several plays that I tried to watch late in the first half, they're just floating around. And whether it's zone coverage where they're just kind of soft or Dawson spying on Mahoney or whatever they're doing, it's very frustrating as a viewer to try to figure out what's going on there, because they're not blitzing, they're not helping out in coverage, they're not making tackles, and they're not in the middle of the field. So I don't know where they are, what they're doing. But Strnad and Jabori had two fantastic interceptions. The Strnad pick's about as good as you'll ever see out of a linebacker. And I want to give a credit to Luke Masterson. He was thrown in there against Notre Dame and then this week against Syracuse, a high-flying passing offense. Those are two very difficult situations to be put in. He made a couple of great plays on the ball in the second half, one that he probably should have picked off, and another breakup that he came in late on. So I think he's coming around a bit as well. But I don't know. There's still a lot of frustration on the defense, and they'll be tried against a very good NC State team this week. But, all in all, we got the win. That's what matters, and hopefully they'll continue to get a little bit better as the year goes on. One thing I do want to note, we got several questions about this, the injuries. This should come out in the press conference tomorrow, maybe Wednesday, when the depth chart is released, which is usually tomorrow afternoon. I believe Duke Ejiofor injured his ankle. I'm not a medical expert, but the doctors were looking at the upper part of his leg. If that is a high ankle sprain, that's usually a 4 to 6 week injury on standard. So that would probably put him out for the final two regular season games. That really not help out a lot considering he has had a fantastic year. I also have not heard anything on Jesse Bates or Cade Carney, but I believe those two should come out probably tomorrow, and hopefully it's a little bit more optimistic. Rob, do you have anything on, I guess, the injuries or the Syracuse game to wrap up before we move to NC State?
I guess the only thing to mention with the linebackers, I do remember watching the Louisville game with our friend Zach, who knows a lot more about football, all football, especially schematically, and he did mention that, you know, the linebackers aren't dropping back deep enough into some of their zone responsibilities. So, you know, I think that could be part of the reason why you're seeing, you know, that middle of the defense just wide open. And there was, you know, that play against Louisville, Jabouri almost made an incredible interception, but the reason he didn't actually pick it off was because he wasn't, you know, deep enough in his drop, where it should have been a much easier interception. So potentially something to watch out for. But, yeah, obviously really hope Jesse Bates comes back. I think we've seen how badly we've missed him. Masterson, obviously, I agree with you. I thought he improved a lot against Syracuse and was thrown against two difficult matchups. But I think, especially with some of the playmakers that State has and Hines and Samuels, having Jesse Bates there to be a sure tackler would go a long way in helping us.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, you never want to see one guy mean that much, because you see what happens like tonight when he, or this week, the past 2 weeks where he hasn't been able to play, you know, what happened to the team overall. But hopefully he'll be back. I believe he's nursing a knee injury. But it would be good if we had him against the speed of Nyheim Hines and Jalen Samuels and Ryan Finley for NC State. So that's a good time, I guess, to pivot to NC State. Wake Forest will take on the Wolfpack in Winston-Salem on Saturday night at 7:30 on ESPNU. And I did some research today because I know Wake Forest and NC State have met, obviously, a lot over the past 100 years, but very rarely are both teams good when the two teams meet. And as a matter of fact, this is the first time since 1971, November 13th, 1971, that Wake Forest has hosted an in-state team in November, when both teams are above 500 in the ACC. We actually, oddly enough, hosted App State in 1988 when we were both 6-4, and we tied at 34 to make us go 6-4-1, and cost us a bowl berth, which is the most Wake Forest thing ever to do. But I stopped after I looked at the Duke game. I did not see a game when Wake has hosted NC State where they are both above 500 in November. So this is a very important game for Wake Forest as far as bowl, and it's a very important game for NC State. They came back against Boston College to win 17-14, and they come into this game with a 7-3 record, nationally ranked. It opened as a toss-up, and now Wake has moved to about a 1 to a 1.5-point favorite. Rob, what are your overall thoughts about NC State based on what you've seen so far this year, and also how you think Wake Forest matches up and how much this game means to Wake Forest?
Well, look, they're clearly a really talented team. You know, you don't contend against Clemson and then knock off Florida State. Obviously, Florida State had their own issues, but they knocked them off early in the season when optimism was still high. They knocked them off on the road. You know, they're clearly a talented team, but this is a team that's had some disappointment in recent weeks. They obviously lost a game they should have won against South Carolina. They completely outplayed them, but typical NC State miscues, allowing an opening kickoff return, ultimately cost them that victory. But they bounce their way back, start getting some more hype. Then they lose to Notre Dame, and then ACC Atlantic Division essentially on the line at home against Clemson. Couldn't find a way to get that done. And, you know, I think they came out flat this past Saturday against Boston College. Boston College has been playing a lot better, but only beat them by 3. I like this spot. I think we're coming off a lot of enthusiasm. I think we're going to be playing loose. I think we're going to be playing with a lot of confidence. Night game. I like this spot. They're a very talented team, especially on the defensive line with Chubb, probably conference defensive player of the year, and an explosive offense with Finley, Hines, and Samuels. But, you know, I think we can keep up with them. I was initially worried going into the game, you know, several weeks ago, I guess entering the season really, thinking, I don't know if we can score with them, but we can score with them. We can score with any team left on our schedule. So I'm really excited about this game, and it's really all upside for Wake, but, you know, it would be Clawson's first opportunity to beat NC State during his tenure here.
Yeah, I think the big thing is just the night game, the fact that you can build on this, you can bring recruits to it. And yes, NC State will bring a lot of fans. They always do. And since it will be a night game, it will be a little bit louder on probably both sides. It'll be senior fifth day for Wake Forest. It'll be State will be bringing a large contingent from Raleigh and the surrounding area. They have a big fan base. They're having a very good year too. And they're still trying to set their sights on the Orange Bowl, despite their loss to Clemson and they've been eliminated from the Atlantic. It's a very good team, and they're trying to get to 9-10 wins of their own this year, and they can get to 10 wins if they beat Wake this week and beat Carolina and then win their bowl game. It can still be a special year for them. It can still be a very special year for Wake Forest. Only three times in school history has Wake Forest won 8 regular season games. This is a chance for Wake to continue to develop and show recruits that they're for real and bring people in. The over-under for this game is 62 points, and that's right at about what Football Study Hall has it to, 32-27. They like Wake Forest in that. They're pretty high. The analytics are fairly high on Wake just because of the offensive output has been really ridiculous and outside what you would expect. It's almost an outlier nationally over the last few weeks. And that offense that started at 97th in the country is now at 26th in the country, while the defense that started 23rd is at 55th. So it's been a complete reversal. And if you give me the over-under as to when the offense would pass the defense in S&P, I would have said maybe not even by next year. So it's been a phenomenal turnaround by the offense, and they're going up against an NC State defense that is 60th in the country according to S&P Plus, and they do a reasonable job at defending the pass. They are, let's see here, ranked 35th in defending the pass and 39th in defending the pass and 45th in defending the rush. So a fairly well-balanced team. Wake Forest, of course, have the second-best passing attack in the NCAA, and their rushing has improved a little bit, but it's still not up to where it needs to be. Although if the line continues blocking like this, then, you know, the sky's the limit at that point. What do you think the defense has to do to kind of shut down Nyheim Hines, Jalen Samuels, and Ryan Finley? I know they like to get to the boundary, use a lot of reverses, a lot of speed, a lot of different plays. What do you think we need to do as far as limiting that and just kind of keeping everything in front of us to prevent a 40-point game again?
I think this is where just preparation is going to be big, and not losing contain and having a very in-depth knowledge of all the, you know, the trickery and the reverses that they like and misdirection that they like to run, because they're so shifty, you can't get caught going the wrong way. So I think we're going to need to be smart about our pursuit angles. And if we need to come in, you know, a little bit slower, but at a better angle, I think that could be big for us. That really hurt us against Lamar Jackson of Louisville. And look, NC State does not have Lamar Jackson. No other team in the country does. But they still, you know, Samuels is a stud. Hines, no, he's been dealing with some injuries, but he's been very good too. So we can't lose contain on the outside. And then with Finley, I think we're going to need to find a way to generate pressure, because if you give him time, he will pick you apart. He's extremely accurate. And he can actually run a little bit too. He had a nice run against Boston College and has had nice runs throughout the season. So I think we're going to need to generate some pressure and, you know, hopefully get them in situations where, you know, they're off schedule, and then they're less likely to run some of those, you know, perimeter sweeps.
Yeah, and the good news is, while Finley is mobile, he's run 35 times for 207 yards. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not really even Zach Mahoney from last week, and he's definitely not the Notre Dame quarterback Brandon Wimbush. So it's nice that we will have a slight break in passing and running quarterbacks, because it feels like every week we've seen a guy who can run the football back there, which has hurt us tremendously with what I would say is a subpar speed at linebacker position. I know Dalton has been spying a lot, but that has been a problem stopping the quarterback run when he's gotten out of the pocket. The good thing is their efficiency there, it's about average, but they do hit the explosive play a fair amount, but they're not good at finishing drives, and their field position is iffy as well. In a game that could be decided by a few points, their special teams and kicking has not been good this year either. They've alternated between Carson Wives, who is a Carson Newman transfer in this year, and Kyle Pambert, who I believe is the starting kicker listed this week, the guy who, of course, missed the Clemson kick last year that would have won the game and knocked them out of the title game. But overall, I think
– not that you're rubbing it in.
No, now that I'm rubbing it in, just pointing out that their special teams have been fairly iffy this year as well. Let me see here. Wise is 6 of 12 on field goals. Kyle Bamberg is 2 of 5. So they're 8 of 17 on field goals this year. And in a game
seems
that
bad.
Could be pretty close. Yeah, in a game that's a toss-up game, predicted by Vegas, and we've got a kicker who's done quite well this year in Mike Weaver. That could be a pretty big factor. If you wanted me to take the over-under right now at 62, I would be running to the bank with a lot of money to take the over. Depending on the weather, it's supposed to rain a little bit, but we'll see how that goes. Would you take the over at 62 right now if you were a gambling man?
Oh, yeah. Now watch, you know, it'd be a torrential downpour.
like the Syracuse game last year.
It is potentially, you know, I'm seeing rain. Obviously, it's tough to tell when it's that far out, but seeing rain, I think that could bring us down, and you know, maybe a little bit of nerves of it being a night game. But I see this one as a shootout.
Yeah, it looks like just as of now, scattered showers on Saturday, high of 60, low of 38. Precipitation kind of throughout the day, kind of waning around 7, but then picking up around 10. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. But wind also 15 to 20 miles an hour, so that could be interesting. But overall, I think everybody's expecting a good game. What do you think this game, like, frame this game in what it means for Wake Forest? And obviously, it's big for what bowl we might get. Right now we're sitting in Charlotte, the bowl projection, but there's a pretty big drop off coming to Annapolis and Detroit, and then possibly taking that next step to Orlando and Jacksonville. Beating an in-state team, winning a night game, getting to 7-4 with a game left. What does this game mean for the Wake Forest program overall?
I think it's good because it can, you know, last year, look, we won 7-6. We won 6 games in the regular season. This gives us an opportunity to bump up by a decent amount because I am very confident that we'll beat Duke. So I think that's at least 7 wins right there. But I think if you look at the number of teams who get 7 wins versus 6 wins versus 8 wins, I mean, I think 8's really a special number, and that's reserved for really maybe the top 30 teams or so in the country. Obviously, depends a little bit on the conference. But if you're Clawson and you're looking to elevate your team to the next level, I think he's done that in a number of ways this year by knocking off Louisville, one of the teams, you know, typically in the upper echelon of the Atlantic. But I think if you can go and beat State, I think it could help us with in-state recruiting moving forward. We definitely go against those guys a lot. Won't say we'll beat them on everybody, but I think we can beat them on some more guys. And then, you know, look, you're setting yourself up for 9 wins if you get a good bowl. And if you do go, if a team's within one spot of you in the bowl eligibility, then they can be picked ahead of you. But if we're 2 spots above, then we can get picked above, you know, Florida State, for example, who could still make a bowl. And because of their, you know, their large fan base, I could easily see a tier 1 bowl picking them, because making a bowl game's not, or, you know, the bowl you go to isn't necessarily a meritocracy. So, you know, I think this could be big. I think this could just continue to add a lot of, you know, great recruiting momentum, might help with some late flips, could certainly help with the 2019 class. So I think this would be an unbelievable win for Clawson, one of his biggest yet.
Yeah, I agree. And just kind of eyeballing the records last year, and this is after bowl games, it looks like give or take around 30 teams after bowl games won at least 8 games. At 7, there's a ton of 7-win teams as well. Obviously, there are a lot of bowl games where there's 6-6 teams, so somebody will get to a 7-win season. But I would say it probably takes down from about 45 teams, maybe 40 teams that have won 7 games total, to maybe 25 to 30 that won 8, and that's after bowl games. So I would say only 20 to maybe 25 in a given season win in Power 5 win 8 games. So that would put Wake in pretty elite company. And moving into next year, where we return all of our offensive linemen, all of our wide receivers, obviously Wolford and Serenay, losing them is going to hurt, but we've got Jack Fruenthal and Kendall Hinton, who has been our starter before last year and came into the season as the starter before Wolford knocked him out. We've got those guys coming in, and the offense should be better next year as well. So it sets us up for a big year moving into next year. Let's go ahead and move, I guess, into basketball a little bit, if you still have some time, Rob.
I still have time as far as I know.
Perfect. You know, the season obviously did not start the way we wanted to as Wake Forest basketball fans against Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern, a very good team in their own right, came into Winston-Salem and knocked off the Demon Deacons 85-83 on Friday night. It was a bit of a shock, not only that we lost, but kind of the way that we lost, because we came out to a 25-11 lead, 27-13 lead, and it was basically the same blueprint as the Queens game, the Division II team that we wound up beating a couple weeks ago, except this time Georgia Southern stormed back and they beat us. Tukey Brown and Ike Smith, the two guys that we kind of highlighted before, their backcourt played, 72 out of the 80 minutes. They combined for 40 points, and we just couldn't stop them, kind of picking up where we left off last year. A Wake Forest team that can score and they can't stop anybody. Rob, you were at the game, and you ought to get a little bit of a better feel for it there. What were your initial impression of the Wake Forest basketball team on Friday night in their loss against Georgia Southern?
Yeah, certainly very frustrating. You know, we looked sluggish. I didn't think we looked that great against Queens either, so I was hoping to see an improvement, and we did early on. As you mentioned, we got out to, you know, fairly sizable, comfortable lead, but we could not sustain that. And, you know, offensively, obviously, we're really going to miss John Collins. I know I'm not breaking news there, but we struggle to score easily. I mean, when you look at our set, sometimes it's going a little bit later into the shot clock, and the ball movement on the outside isn't as crisp, and we don't have anybody who we can just go to. I mean, we do, but in that game, there was nobody who just took complete control over the ball and was able to get us some buckets when we really needed them. We had to earn a lot of our points, which could be problematic. And then, you know, defensively, look, I think there are some aspects where we're going to be better. In terms of, I think, positionally, we rotated a little bit better. We're probably a little quicker now. We're losing some shot-blocking presence on the inside. But the biggest problem to me seemed to be securing the defensive rebounds. A number of times we got the ball and we got our hands on it. We just could not secure it. And that's going to be really problematic moving forward, I think, against even bigger teams. So I'm tempering my expectations down a little bit. I'm very curious to see how we come out against Liberty. The only positive I would say, well, Shondi Brown did look standing, and we can get to that. But, if you're going to have a wake-up call, obviously you never really want it. But, you know, maybe they can refocus and, continue to work harder as the season goes along.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to me is not that we lost. It was how we lost. I mean, we shot 46% from threes, 11 for 24. We grabbed 20 offensive rebounds compared to just 20 defensive rebounds, and we still lost to a team out of the Sun Belt. Now, this is a very good Georgia Southern team. I'm not trying to make excuses for the loss, and I said this coming into the game. They're ranked just outside the 100 mark in KenPom, and that's better than, about half of our schedule this year. So while this was a season-opening game, this was against a very good team. They were turned 4 out of 5 starters, I believe, and they also had one of the most experienced teams in the Sun Belt last year. So they're going to compete for that conference. They're going to compete to be at the 20-year mark, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them in the NCAA tournament. That being said, we went to the NCAA tournament last year. We're looking to take the next step. Obviously, we have to replace John Collins. We have to find a replacement for Dinos Mitoglou. And I thought Terrence Thompson stepped in and brought basically what we thought. I don't mean this in any negative connotation whatsoever. He's a garbage man. He grabs rebounds. He puts them back in. He battles inside, and you don't want him to rely on him too much. You look at what Keyshawn Woods, Sean D. Brown, and Brian Crawford did. They combined for, 65 points. You throw in Brandon Childress there. 72 out of our 83 points came from the 1, 2, or 3 position. You looked heading into the season, who's going to be the 5 for us? Olivier Saar with a late scratch where he hurt his finger in practice. It said he shouldn't be out very long, but his status for tomorrow night is currently unknown. Daron Moore comes out and immediately picks up 2 fouls, picking right up where he left off last year. In total, Moore played 14 minutes, had 2 points, four rebounds, five turnovers, three blocks, and four personal fouls. He didn't get playing time because he can't stay on the court. Same with Sanjafet Matias. He was out there for 7 minutes, and he accrued no stats at all. He had a 7 trillion, so he was just running around. That's not what you want out of your five. You want a guy who gets in there and blocks shots.
Now, I can't believe I'm going to defend somebody who just got a 7 trillion, but I won't defend it to the full extent, but I will say a number of times he was posting up and probably should have been given the ball. Now, I'm not going to say he was going to drop step and dunk on his defender. I would have liked to have seen the guards feed him a little bit more because I thought he had some okay position. But other than that, no, he did not necessarily flash, which, not the most encouraging thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, he's a 6'11 guy, 6'11, 280. The tallest guy on Georgia Southern was 6'8, 240 and 6'8, 230. And those guys played a combined 40 minutes. And the guy who was 6'8, 230 had 14 points and 13 rebounds in 24 minutes. And SJM played 7 minutes and didn't accrue a statistic. Overall, if you look at the team, I think it's definitely going to be one that is a short bench. If these guys can't get into shape, Melo Eggleston played 1 minute. SJM played 7 minutes. More because of foul trouble, played 14 minutes. Mitchell played 10 minutes. It would not surprise me if by the end of the year, we're down to a pretty solid 7 to 8 main rotation where you've got Wood, Brown, Thompson, Crawford, Wilbekin, and Childress. Those are six. And then whoever the big man is that steps up. And if that forces us to go small, then we'll get used to going small. But I mean, we can't have guys out there that are playing for 7 minutes, not accruing stats, or guys that are playing for 15 minutes and because they committed 5 turnovers and 4 fouls. And it's frustrating because these are things we kind of knew coming in the season. It's not really something Danny Manning could address. It was a late departure by Mitoglou. He came in and plugged that with Terrence Thompson, which looks to be a pretty good pickup early on. And then obviously Collins leaving. We knew that about midway through last year, but you can't plan for that from a recruiting standpoint. It's an early season. I don't want to chalk it up to just being a lost season right now, but I do think that the loss of Collins and Mitoglou and even Austin Arians is going to hurt a lot more than people thought. You know, I think a lot of people said, oh, we're going to come in, we're just going to be a more efficient team defensively and offensively. But you can't overstate the loss of Mitoglou and Collins enough. They were guys that put leadership, guys that went in and grabbed rebounds, where you've got other guys who are on the court that have to go step up and grab rebounds now that, you know, maybe they're still used to waiting for one of those guys to come in. So that's something that you have. You know, we play Liberty tomorrow. They won by 45 points over the weekend over something called a Clark Summit. So that doesn't really provide a lot. But they did beat VCU by 16 points in an exhibition game. Wake Forest is projected to win this game by 13. Liberty is vastly undermanned as far as height goes. But as these last two games have shown, Wake doesn't seem to be able to exploit that height differential. What are your thoughts about what you want to see tomorrow and what the improvements want to be if you're going to get a little bit more optimistic about where the season's heading after two games instead of one?
Sure. I mean, I'm looking for a crisper ball movement. I'm looking for a greater sense of urgency, especially offensively and then defensively. I'm looking for a little bit less blown assignments in awareness. And I'm also looking for, how aggressive are we in securing rebounds? A number of times we got our hands on it. We could not seal the deal. And that's where I underestimated what the loss of Dinos Mitoglou would be. He has massive hands. He's a great rebounder, a pretty good shot blocker for us. So honestly, had we had Mitoglou, I think, we would have been a much better team this year just based on his value above what our current replacements are. Thank goodness we got Thompson. I think he needs to be a little bit stronger in terms of putting the ball back up and ultimately converting. And, I'm hoping to see more out of Darrell Moore. Keyshawn Woods talked him up a pretty good amount at ACC Media Days, talked about his improvement. And you can definitely see improvement in terms of the way he runs. But it's not quite there. So against a smaller team in Liberty, this is, I shouldn't say a test, but this is going to tell you something. If he's not doing it now, he's probably not going to be doing it against a lot of others.
Yeah, and I mean, Liberty's another team. I wrote an article last week before the season started that kind of highlighted our schedule and said it's a lot harder than kind of how it meets the eye, and you can tell what is trying to be done with the schedule. There's a lot of teams between 100 and 200 in KenPom, which for these lower conferences is usually going to be top three or four. So Liberty went, let's see, they went 19 and 12 last year. They're a very slow team. Richie Mikhailak's running one of the slower offenses in the country. They made the postseason. I don't know what tournament it was, but they won two games and either, I think it's the CBI, before losing to UMBC. This could be a test. And I mean, a lot of Wake fans don't want to hear that, but these games were scheduled with the purpose of not hurting our RPI once we got down the stretch here, and that means these games are a little tougher than we expect. So tomorrow night will be a test. They beat BCU in the exhibition game, and Wake Forest needs to come out and even up their schedule at 1-1. Rob, can you give some thoughts on the freshmen that you saw? Shaundy Brown, Mello Eggleston obviously played 1 minute. Freshman.
Well, unfortunately, I have to run, but I will say Shaundy Brown, outstanding, and I hope to see Saar keep holding down the fort, and go Deeks.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Rob. All right, so Rob was having some car trouble, so that's why he had to dip out a little early here. But heading into the game tomorrow night, this is obviously it's far from a must win, but I think at this point we're just trying to look for I guess some continuity going into the second game. Wake Forest rebounded it very well offensively, and we know what we've got in the backcourt with Keyshawn Wood, Shaundy Brown, Brian Crawford, and Brandon Childress. But the big questions remain at the four and the five. We didn't get to see Olivier Saar due to his injury. Donovan Mitchell played 10 minutes. Wasn't much of a, I guess, presence in the box score with three rebounds, had a turnover and a couple of fouls. Richard Washington is still nursing his shoulder, so he's out. Right now, it's going to be a question of who can step up at the four and the five, because otherwise the team is just going to have to go to a three or at times a four guard lineup if Brown is going to play there, where Thompson slides to the five. And I don't think the coaching staff wants to do that. I don't think the fans want to see that, because it's going to produce a lot of sloppy basketball, a lot of up and down. And it'll be interesting to see what Coach Manning and the staff do tomorrow night against Liberty, a team that's a lot smaller, a team that likes to slow it down, play a half-court offense, to see if we still try to press it, or if we can try to get into a nice half-court set where we can be efficient too. Last year, Wake Forest was obviously very efficient in all aspects of the game, but a lot of that was just tossing the ball down to John Collins and letting him lay it in or dunk it or get his own rebound and lay it back in. This year, we don't have that inside presence yet, and it's going to be kind of a reversal where Bryant Crawford, Keyshawn Woods, and Shaundy Brown all have to step up, and they did so admirably. Keyshawn Woods had 25 points, six rebounds, and an assist. Crawford hurt. I think he had foul trouble, and he also might have jammed a finger in the first half, but he had a pretty good second half, coming alive for 19 points, three rebounds, and three assists. He did have three turnovers, but also had three steals. So he kind of made up for his deficiencies there. Kind of picking up where Rob was going, Shaundy Brown in his first career game for Wake had 21 points and nine rebounds. A very successful season opener for the freshman, and he showed why right off the bat that he's considered a top 30 player in his class. Obviously, his body is very, very ready for the ACC, and to be 18 years old, that's something that you can't really teach at this point. And I thought Ryan Horn, the athletic trainer, had some pointed comments in the Flow Hoops video that I would recommend. It's about 10 minutes long that follows him around a little bit. He states that Brown has an NBA-ready body, obviously, but they're working on the hip and ankle mobility that he needs to excel on the basketball court, because he's an athlete in high school. He was much better than everybody he was playing against. But as you get into the ACC, while everybody's not as built as he is, obviously everybody's extremely talented. And you get into those top 25 teams, Louisville, Miami, Duke, Florida State, Carolina, NC State, Syracuse, they've all got athletes like that. They've all got players who are very skilled, and Shaundy Brown has to figure that out. But I think it's shown that he can make an immediate presence at the three, and he played 31 minutes, and that's what we're going to need. Pretty much night in and night out, maybe not the 30 minutes every night, but at least 25 to 30 good minutes. And he didn't commit a single foul and only had two turnovers, to show you why everybody's excited about the 2018 class as well. Some people I know don't like recruiting numbers. They don't like to hear, oh, we got five stars, you know, we'll just bring in three stars and build them up. But that, you know, it, time and time again, we see the teams that win national championships and have success, sustained success in the regular season, conference tournament, and NCAA tournament are guys that have 4 and 5 stars. So our class for 18 is very, very encouraging. And I think Sean D. Brown are quite good as well. So moving ahead to soccer, and I was fortunate enough to go to the Charleston title game because it was about 15 minutes away from my apartment. And while it was not the most exciting game ever, given that it was a 0-0 draw through 110 minutes, Wake Forest did manage to come away with its second consecutive ACC championship. And while it was supposed to be around 16 overcast, it wound up being a pretty nice day. And all the Wake fans who drove down or lived in the area, special shout out to the congregation. There was a great crowd there, and it was a definitive Wake Forest home field advantage. I would say at smallest had a 2-1 fan advantage, and I would say it might have been up to 3-4 times. And it was very loud. You can audibly hear the Wake Forest fans over the ESPN3 broadcast. I was told after the fact, and you know, Wake Forest decidedly looked like the better team for much of the first half before in the 43rd minute, we picked up our second yellow card, and that caused Wake to go down a man. And unfortunately, when you get 2 yellows, that turns into a red, and you play a man short for the rest of the game. Fortunately for Wake Forest, UVA, despite having the main advantage, chose to not exploit that at all. They kept they stayed to their 5-4-1 tactical formation and just refused to move numbers up, which caused for a very boring soccer game. But for Wake Forest, that was about as well as we could have hoped for that to go after we went down to 10 men. We were able to really, in the second half, still look like the better team. And I haven't seen possession numbers on it, but if I had to guess, I would say Wake maintained possession. And we outshot them in the second half 3-1. I don't think there were any shots on goal in the first half. But we got into penalty kicks, and from there, it got really nerve-wracking. And there were shades of the NCAA finals against Stanford last year where Wake Forest dropped. Obviously, they lost that game. But Virginia made their first two kicks, and Wake Forest missed their first two. Their first two were saved. Baccaro's first kick was not a great one. It was easily saved. The second kick was a little bit better, but it was saved as well. So Wake dug up themselves a hole, down 2-0. And for those of you who don't know, in penalty kicks in soccer, it is the best of 5. They're basically rounds. And if it's tied after 5, then it goes into basic innings afterwards where it's sudden death. If the first team scores and the second team does not, then the game's over. Vice versa, the game is also over. If both score, both miss, you just keep going. But Wake Forest bounced back. We scored on the third attempt, and our goalkeeper came up big. He was the MVP of the entire ACC championship, made a save. Wake then scored on the next attempt, and the Virginia player skied it over the goal to tie the game up. The next two both went in for Wake and Virginia, and the same in the fifth round. And then in the sixth round, Ima Tumasi came up and drilled a kick, and a Virginia player skied it again, setting off a pretty raucous celebration. So this is the second consecutive or the second straight ACC championship tournament win for Wake Forest. And Wake Forest still is not it's still looking for the treble, which is the regular season title, the ACC tournament title, and now the NCAA tournament title. The bracket came out today, and Wake Forest, as expected, was the number one overall seed, and they will await on Sunday. They will host the winner of the William & Mary Columbia soccer game. And since we got the number one overall seed, it's a 48-team tournament, so the top 16 seeds all get byes in the first round. VCU is the 16 seed, so assuming if everything goes to plan, we will play either William & Mary or Columbia. They are 29th and 34th in RPI, respectively. Columbia is 29th, William & Mary is 34th. And then if VCU wins that, we will play them in the round of 32. Then from there, we will either play Clemson or Stanford, which is a pretty interesting layout. That'll be in the Elite Eight. Stanford, obviously, is the team that Wake Forest lost to in the championship last year. Clemson is the team that's given Wake Forest the biggest two tests this year. They are fifth in the country. They're fifth in the ACC tournament, and now they are seeded 8th nationally, which is probably a little lower than they deserve, quite frankly. But it'll be a tough quarterfinals matchup there. If they win that, Wake will, if everything goes according to seed, which it very rarely does, but the best opponent they could play is Louisville, also an ACC team. We beat them in Louisville earlier this year. And then the finals, we would host or it would be in Philadelphia, the Final Four would be, against Indiana, who has yet to lose this year, but they did drop the Big Ten Conference Tournament yesterday to 24th ranked Wisconsin. It's going to be a pretty good tournament. Wake should – it's going to host all the way through the final – to the Final Four, where it would then move to Pennsylvania. I believe that is at the Philadelphia Union Stadium, which is about 35 to 40 minutes outside of Philadelphia. The first game that Wake would host will host will be Sunday. And as I said, it will be either William & Mary or Columbia. They will be huge favorites in that game. They'll be favored – in every game the rest of the NCAA tournament as the number one overall seed, and seeing them play live yesterday against a team that is talented like Virginia, top 15 team, it's easy to see why Wake Forest is the hands-on favorite to win the national championship. They're dominant on the ball. They're very good defensively when they need to be. Even when they go a man down, they can still maintain possession, and we've got great goalkeeping at the back, and it's a very well-rounded team. Bobby Muse should be very proud of what he's done. Three straight ACC Coach of the Year awards, back-to-back ACC Player of the Year awards last year in Ian Hark, this year in John Baccaro, and also a Defensive Player of the Year this year in Kevin Politz, who unfortunately is out for the year with a knee injury. But yeah, so it's been a heck of a weekend. Congratulations to the Wake Forest women's soccer team as well, who defeated Georgetown on Friday night in penalty kicks also, and they will travel to play Penn State this weekend on Friday afternoon. Penn State 10th in the country, and Wake Forest is 24th, so kudos to them as well. And overall, it was a very fun-filled weekend, and another weekend coming up is going to be just like that. We've got the Wake State game on Saturday night. We've got three basketball games as Wake Forest travels to Lynchburg, Virginia, for what was supposed to be the U.S. Virgin Islands Paradise Jam, but now it's the Paradise Jam in Lynchburg. We will play Drake on Friday night. If we win, we will either play, I believe, Colorado or Quinnipiac, and then if we win that, we will play in the finals against Houston. All those games, I believe, will be at 8 or 8:30 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. Obviously the men's soccer game team has a game on Sunday, and then the women play on Friday. So if you get a chance, get out to the game on Friday, on Saturday night. I would say be your number one priority. Support the Wake Forest football team. Hopefully the weather stays good. Not looking great now, but it should get a little bit better. And then Sunday, get out and support your men's soccer team as well. And obviously watch the basketball game. But we appreciate, as always, that you tuned in to listen here. And I know we got several questions and comments on there. We tried to address all of them on Twitter, and we covered as much as we could on here as well. But if you have any follow-up, just hit Rob up on Twitter, or hit myself up at BSD_RA Johnston. But as always, we are happy to have you, and go Deeks. Thank you.